Okay, good evening, everyone. Can I have the roll call, please?
Papler?
Here.
Ormsby?
Here.
Peters? Rafferty?
Here.
Stoltenberg?
Here.
Wendland?
Here. Okay, we had minutes from the last meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move for approval of the minutes from the November 20th meeting as submitted.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve the meeting minutes from November 20th, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay, the minutes are approved. Okay, good evening and welcome everyone to the Plan and Zone Commission meeting for December 18th, 2019. I see a number of you in the audience tonight with regard to these cases. So if at the particular time I recognize the audience with regard to a particular case, there's a podium to my right and to your left with a microphone back there. We'd love to hear your input and capture it on the record. So I'll ask for your input after the commission has gone through. We are an appointed body by the city council and the mayor to review matters of site plans, land use, and such. And with that, Greg, we will begin.
Mr. Chairman, the case before us here, 19099, involves an existing batch plant. Here's State Street. This is Valley Drive right here. Here you outline in blue is the 100-year floodplain, and this is the East Fork of Pigeon Creek right here. Orange area here, the burnt orange area, is the 500-year floodplain. The petitioner is anticipating adding an addition here to the structure as a garage and then an area here, a building to store fly ash for the processing of concrete. This is a plat of the ready mix locale right here, the lot of record. You do have a major overhead transmission line easement running through the parcel, and then the 100-year is delineated on that plat. This is the site plan. You have an existing batch plant in this area right here. Addition is 9,600 square feet being requested to be added on here. And then in this area here, 17,658 feet to store fly ash for the use in processing of cement to strengthen it. Batch plant, existing area, additional garage area right here. And this is another view of that additional garage area being added on for vehicular storage and also repair. This is the fly ash building right here. An example one that's currently in Eldridge. You may not be able to see it, but there's a truck here, and they use a vacuuming method to bring the fly ash into this area for storage and also to, I believe, remove it. Staff in reviewing the proposal would also note that during the initial site plan process, the tree count was met for this site for future build out and the like. It is not needing any additional landscaping due to the fact it's not in a buffer area, but also the fact that the area here, we considered that this is already filled in for vehicular use when we did the original, and that the spacing that was done necessarily on the streetscape area, that all of that landscaping was put in on site already, so there's no additional needed there. Staff in reviewing this proposal would recommend approval with the conditions that have to be met in the report. I would ask any questions.
Okay, thank you, Greg. John, any updates since publication of our documents?
We just discussed, well, be glad to answer any questions throughout the public hearing process as this goes along, Mr. Chairman.
And I did have, and I'll enter it into the record now, a letter from Mark and Ann Brockway, 1424 Berryfield Court, Bettendorf, Iowa, directed the Plan and Zone Commission dated today, and asked that it be read into the record. So, commission members, as an adjoining property owner and neighbor of area businesses and residential property owners, we would like for your consideration of our following concerns. Number one, requiring adequate stormwater management on site to ensure capacity and containment of runoff to adjacent Pigeon Creek. Plan note 5 states stormwater, I quote, stormwater will drain as overland flow into creek via ditch along east and south, unquote. Therefore, first flush runoff after a rain event will likely contain various materials, including cement debris from trucks in plant operations, fly ash, gravel sediment, oil, grease, etc. Plan shows no on-site detention or containment and shows a bio cell of limited capacity. Number two, please address handling and monitoring of proposed fly ash building and operations as it relates to possible air and water contamination and the known significant health effects to people and impacts to the environment. See attached article. I'm not going to read the entire attached article, but it is a PSR, Physicians for Social Responsibility report referencing coal ash hazardous to human health. Number three, concern for traffic safety regarding slow-moving cement trucks and large material hauling trucks entering and exiting on Highway 67. Please clarify total maximum number of trucks on the site with the proposed expansion and consider requiring acceleration and deacceleration lanes along the project frontage. Four, lastly, although industrial in nature, it should be recognized that this site is adjacent to both new and future commercial businesses as well as residential properties to the west. The site represents an entrance or gateway to Bettendorf from the north and should have a highway frontage look reflecting this significance. Additional landscaping, tree planting, screening, and appropriate building setbacks and elevations should be considered for aesthetic purposes. And that's the end of the letter. Okay, so good, thanks. All right, questions or comments from the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple questions. I don't know if there's anybody here that could answer them. It's primarily, could we learn a little bit about fly ash, how it's delivered, how it's handled, that sort of thing, just what the operations are?
And yeah. I would piggyback on that question. How is that going to be handled differently with the new storage building versus how it's handled currently?
And while you're thinking about those two questions, mine was, is there currently fly ash on site? So it sounds like all fly ash related. Mm-hmm. So it looks like we have someone that's going to address that. Yes, sir.
I'm Ethan Mailer. I own Pleasant Valley Ready Mix. we currently store fly ash on site in the building to produce concrete. The building that we're proposing is a identical one that we have out in Eldridge. We currently store about 30,000 tons of fly ash in Eldridge in two buildings. We transfer 50,000 tons of fly ash through the Eldridge properties. We're looking at doing this one as an extra one if needed. The way it's transported from the power plants to our buildings is in pneumatic tankers. They then blow the material or the fly ash into the building. The building has a dust collector on it, so it takes all the dust that comes off the building or the trucks and runs into filters and clean air comes out. The pneumatics run at like 15 PSI, so it's not like filling up a tire with 100 PSI that could explode. It runs 15 PSI with a large volume of air at low pressure. The way it's taken back out, I don't know if everybody can see this, this is the facility in Eldridge, and this is the building that I'm talking about right here, which is identical to that building in the picture, or it is that building. And this is another fly ash building. Neighbors all the way around. This is on Fisher Court in Eldridge. Here's a picture, maybe a little better of that with land or grass around it. And I guess the gutters around that. That's the same building looking from a climate engineer's side. If you can see this picture, there's the dust collector, which is attached to the building. And it's also attached to a telescoping boot that drops into the tanker. The telescoping boot allows fly ash to drop down the center, and then it sucks up the excess dust into the dust collector. The dust collector has filters in here. It's a pulse jet system, so it blows dust back down. drops back into the building, so nothing else should leave the building other than through the spout that goes into the tanker. And like I said, this is identical one out in Eldridge on Fisher Court. This shows a truck blowing off into that facility. It's a pneumatic tanker. They blow it into a line, it goes into the building, and then when they load it back out, it goes into a hopper, and then it goes into an auger, and the auger loads it back into a truck. A fly ash is used for ready-mix concrete, paving, soil stabilization. It always used to be landfilled. If you look on Google, some of the disasters of landfilling fly ash, you'll see some ponds that gave out. The walls are all concrete. They're 16 inches thick, designed by Townsend Engineering. Like I said, since we started, we keep about 50,000 tons of fly ash out of the landfills and into future use. As you know, they keep on shutting more and more coal plants down, so we're going further and further to get this fly ash. And I don't know if I answered all your questions or not.
You currently have fly ash on site. How is it stored today?
Currently, it's in silos on that site inside the building. And those silos have dust collection just like that, and we blow it into the silo, and we use it in the ready-mix concrete.
So it's currently out of the environmental elements, rain and such like that, and it will continue to be. And then the volume today versus the volume you're proposing to do?
Oh, I mean, that plant, for just example of fly ash, cement, and slag, we run about 70,000 tons through that plant a year. That one would hold 10,000 ton if it was filled to the max. But like I said, Eldridge is the main source for doing this fly ash, and this would be a backup source if it was needed. Ethan. And then as far as runoff and everything, we hire EnviroNet to take care of all our plants. They do water sampling a couple times a year. They send it to the state. It's with the we got DNR permits, and EnviroNet does all that. EPA permits, EnviroNet does all that. So all that's handled by EnviroNet, and they do it a couple times a year.
Ethan, this is just a temporary storage facility, correct? So you'll still utilize the silos for your actual production?
Yeah, nothing will change as far as the actual production. This is just a warehouse, if you will, where we'll store excess fly ash and then load it back out for other places.
And does your permit level requirements change at all as a result of this additional storage?
It'll be an addition to the permit. So that'll be added on to the permit for another emission source.
Okay.
So that has not been done yet. No.
When's the timeline for approaching
the DNR? We do them every 2 years, but then this will be immediately before you'd ever do anything. So it has not been submitted. It has not been approved. Nothing been done by the DNR yet for permitting.
With all due respect, don't we have the cart in front of the horse at this juncture then?
What I'd like to do is capture you, sir, on the record, because we can't pick you up on the mic. So let me finish up with the questions from the commission, then I'll go to the audience, and then you can ask Ethan questions direct, if that would work, because we want to capture everything on the record if we could. Yeah. So any other questions from the commission at this point? John, I see you.
I spoke with Nina Booker, Iowa DNR Air Quality. She indicated to me that she is aware of the operation. I went over some of the a summary of what's being requested here, and they're very aware of this situation. So Iowa DNR said that they didn't have any concerns going forward.
Okay. I went out there and looked around quite a bit today myself, and one of the things I noticed, Ethan, is that you've got a wall built out of big blocks, and looks like virtually all the way around your current facility, substantial height and everything. Are you pretty well all walled in that facility today?
No, the front side has a berm, so the front side's all berm where this would be.
Yeah,
and then to I guess the east is no wall, where we'll need to put a bioswale and possibly retention to collect collect more of the rainwater. So we're bermed on the, we're walled on the back and on the side.
And on the west side?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a notation, and that was a reference in the letter about the item number, I think it was four or five, number five, stormwater drain overland. So will there be a bioswale as a result? There will be. Can you talk about that?
Yes.
Brent?
Greg, can you bring back the site plan? Can you show? It's really at the southeast corner of the property. Southeast.
Got it. Okay.
It's over to the other corner. Yep, and then it makes a turn, so it's right in that area is where the biocell is. A little difficult to see at this scale, but it is shown there.
And that's where the water comes off the site and goes into Pigeon Creek.
Correct. The majority of the stormwater runoff heads to the east and to the southeast.
I walked up and down to the extent I could today along the east-west side there, and I couldn't see anything that came out of your facility from that direction. It looked like it all was out of that southeast corner there. So everything that comes off the site comes off there.
Yes.
When we did this, we put the fuel tanks and the washout in the northeast corner, which is the furthest point away from Pigeon Creek, as we didn't want anything to go to the creek. If you walk along that wall, it should just be, I mean, we might have some dirt there, but it should just be an area of empty space in between the wall and the creek.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the commission?
Yeah, just some clarification then. You're saying that the bioswale, or containment area, is opposite Pigeon Creek, so everything drains away from Pigeon Creek?
That's correct.
So you've got...
I'm not saying 100%, but I mean a very, very, very large percentage from almost to the wall goes towards the east, away from Pigeon Creek.
Okay. Because there are issues with just dust getting into Pigeon Creek and having a visible sheen on a river, you know, so it's very important that you have everything contained. And I'm assuming that that's what this bioswale will do.
Correct. It's the water quality component that's required by our stormwater ordinance.
Okay.
And if that's not enough, we own a little piece of property that we bought from Sophie Foster. If we need to add more retention or bioswale, we're not going to argue about that at all.
Okay.
We'd rather have more than not enough.
Well, so would I, but I'm not the expert. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else from the commission? Nope. Okay.
Just a point of clarification, though. So basically, everything is pneumatically conveyed into the building and out of the building.
Well, out of the building, it's auger-fed.
Auger-fed.
So there's a loader inside the building, and it picks it up like rock or sand and puts it in a hopper inside the building.
Okay.
And then an auger comes out and puts it into the truck. And
so is there any dust escaping from that process as it dumps it into the truck?
The dust collector is hooked up to the shroud. Okay. And I'm not going to say that when you pick up the shroud that a little drips off it, but the main powder goes down, and the outside is accordion type, and it sucks it back into the dust collector.
Okay. And this is primarily just like you said, a warehouse.
It's a big flat silo, if you will, or warehouse. We don't own the ash. We just warehouse it.
Okay. And it's got concrete floors in it, all that sort of thing.
There's concrete floors, vapor barrier. We don't want any moisture in, as the fly ash will get hard if there's moisture in it. Likewise, we don't want anything coming out.
Okay. Thank you.
Could you clarify for us the amount of trucks that's going to be increased with these additions?
Increased. Right now we store about, right now we have about 55 semis on site and 35 mixers. Most of them all leave at the beginning of the day and come back. I don't think we're going to add more trucks into the mix. Right now a lot of them go from there out to Eldridge to get this loaded, or they go down to Lafarge and Bettendorf and get fly ash loaded, or Continental and Buffalo.
So the traffic flow won't really change
It shouldn't change, and by adding the temporary road out back, I think we've relieved some pressure on 67 and the gas station and the post office by going in that loop.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Anyone in the audience, or you'd be up. You had the questions before?
Well,
no, I need you to get to the mic. Thank you.
My question was to Ethan was the fact about the DNR as far if you've already got your permit, if you know where you stand on that process. I have quite a few years of industrial experience, and when you're working with permits with the DNR and you're looking at construction projects, you need to have your permit stuff in line before you start, or there can be bad implications on your part. So that was why I was asking the question, or do we actually have the cart in front of the horse a little bit here?
No, yeah. Can I get your name, too? We didn't catch your name for the record.
Mike Coyner.
Thank Mike.
I guess we just started here to see if it's doable before we added any size. I don't know if we're going to make it that big. We just went to the biggest size, so we'd be ready to go. So obviously we're not going to do anything until we did have the proper permits. I just figured we got to start somewhere, so we started here.
Okay. Well, some of my concerns, I own property in the vicinity, and some of my concerns is the fact that I am familiar with the ash, the byproduct that you're working with. I'm also familiar with the landfilling of it. I'm also familiar with the use that you're doing. I have a lot of experience with fluidized transfer products similar to this. So I'm not trying to cut you at the knees. I'm just trying to say that it's never a cut and dry clean process. There is residual dust. There always has been, always will be. I'm very familiar with maintaining bag houses and the things that go wrong with bag houses and the end result. My concern as a property owner in the area is more about the potential contamination of water supply, as my property is fed by well service, which is downstream from you. So any type of, I guess, exposure from your facility has a potential to contaminate the wells of my property and the wells on down the road from us. So that is a big concern of mine. So that would bring me back to some of the things that you are doing on your site plan to try to remedy situations. In other words, your catch basin, if you will. But and I know there's guidelines that you have to work with the DNR to properly size that catch basin, but I would ask that that be divulged as to what size capacity rainfall, typical rainfall event that capacity of your catch basin would take care of. As everybody knows, the last several years we've had pretty excessive rain, and it's a pretty wet area out there. So if it's not properly sized or it's sized for a minimum, you will end up with sediment runoff off of that, which would could potentially turn into contamination. So that's one of my concerns.
No, I understand. We're two on a well there, and we drink the water on that side also. And that's why I said I if we need to go larger than, I think it's sized for an inch and a quarter rainfall right now, which, I mean, yeah, it used to sound fine, but if we need to go larger, then, like I said, I'm not opposed to going larger without any problem.
Yeah, and please understand that my concern is more along the potential contamination of drinking water and contamination of Pigeon Creek than it is to stand in Ethan's way, what he's asking to do. You know, something like this is probably a pretty easy fix if we're sized at an inch and a quarter. 3 inches is not out of the question in our area anymore. If it's a matter of making it bigger, it might alleviate the issue, the concern.
No, I like I said, I don't have any problem. I met with a gentleman today, and I told him today, I said, we wouldn't have any problem making it bigger. And when we go through, I mean, that's a when we submit it back to engineering, we could show that we'll make it bigger than what it's supposed to be. And we don't have a problem doing that. And like I said, this whole thing is where I know you got to get all this out, but we're looking at the possibility of how many tons are out there to still keep out of the landfill as they shut more and more power plants down. We're just trying to get the idea if we can do this and if we have the tons to do, you know, put some in there. I got to start somewhere, so we just decided to start here and see where we go with it. But even then, we don't have a problem doing the bioswale and everything. Even if we don't do that, we don't have a problem, you know, taking care of that.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name is Richard Vermeer. I'm the president of the Ridges Court Homeowners Association, and I wanted to express some of the concerns of my neighbors. The plant here got built within the last decade. I'm not sure if it was 6 or 7 years ago. The cement truck traffic is just oppressive. I was riding my bike down River or Valley Drive last year and almost got run over. They were paving one of the driveways of the one of the smaller industries there along Valley Drive. It'd be west of this location, and the driver wasn't looking at all. Came right out of that driveway to take a right-hand turn, and almost ran me over. I got forced into the other lane, and fortunately there wasn't a car coming, so I'm alive here to talk to you today. We lost one of our neighbors when this plant was built because of the noise. I think some of the noise has been abated subsequently, but Kelly Cofield, who is one of my neighbors, moved away because of the plant. And we walk along Crow Creek Road pretty much every day, and it takes about an hour for us to do our walk, and there must be three or four cement trucks go by in an hour's time. So I don't know, I haven't done the number count, but more than that, yeah. And that's just Crow Creek Road. So I don't know, you know, Crow Creek Road should be a resident. I mean, that's a residential street. I didn't know I was moving onto a major industrial route, but it's a tremendous amount of traffic pressure. There's a lot of kids walking to school there, and so those are my comments.
All right, thank you, appreciate it. Brent, can you just talk to the arterial system down there and how it's designed and what it's planned for?
Yeah, so Crow Creek, while I don't disagree that we have a lot of residents, a lot of residential growth along there, we do have the school. Crow Creek is a collector that feeds to an arterial. So you do have to expect more than just residential traffic on those streets. That's their intent. Ultimately, the subdivision immediately adjacent to this that Ethan purchased some property from and that Mid-American located did dedicate us right away for a future extension of Criswell, and ultimately Criswell's in our long-term plan to rebuild. Unfortunately, that's half us, half county. We're still probably 12 to 15 years away from a full reconstruction of that.
Okay, great, thanks.
Well, I would just like to address the fact that there's no decent bike path on Crow Creek Road. You have all of this major traffic, dump trucks, cement trucks, construction trailers, and there's not even a decent bicycle path. You're putting bicycle paths all over Bettendorf in places where there's very sparsely populated, and this area has traffic on it day after day and kids on bicycles that are going to school, and it's very dangerous. And I'd at least like to see you at least upgrade that bicycle path and make a decent throughway for the bicyclers and the pedestrians that are on that street, especially concerning the amount of traffic that's going through. And it's all big traffic. I mean, there's half of the traffic that goes through there are trucks and half are cars. It's a very busy street. You should take an audit sometime.
I would encourage you to contact your alderman. Ultimately, they set our budgets in terms of our capital improvement budgets. I believe when that trail, we have looked at a trail connection up to Middle Road, and it was on the range of somewhere between $850,000 and $950,000. So obviously, it's a very large project.
But there's a school there. You have children going to school there, taking those sidewalks, and many don't because it's so dangerous.
Can I get your name for the record, too?
I think it's a safety issue. It's a school. I mean, how many children go to school there?
Can I get your name? I didn't get your name.
Susan Vermeer.
Susan Vermeer.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else in the audience with regard to this matter? Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Randy Brockway. And my family owns property adjacent, just downstream on Pigeon Creek and a little bit to the west. It's the old Brockway strawberry sweet corn fields. It's about 10 acres.
Yep, know right where it is.
Okay.
Can you mark that on the map for us, Greg? There we go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Down in that area. It's a farm field, and I would like to keep it as a farm and open space. even though it is zoned industrial. I am quite pleased with what the city of Bettendorf has done in purchasing land along Pigeon Creek from across from our property all the way down to the Mississippi River. It's called Pigeon Creek Park, and it now totals about 45 acres. It's a beautiful hidden gem of a park there. It's most of it is undeveloped. I mention it because this is downstream of the development that's before us tonight. I had quite a bit of concerns when I first saw the drawings of this, and then but the drawings were you know, just unclear to me, but yesterday they came to me in a much more readable fashion, and I was able to spend some time looking at these drawings, and it's the engineering drawings that were submitted to the city. I am a landscape architect, so I can read contours and grades and so forth, and I was relieved to see some of the detail yesterday that I did not see initially. So what I like about the plan is, as Mr. Mailer mentioned, the west part of the site has been raised through the years, and it is draining towards the east, okay? And it drains towards that southeast corner. So it's taking the long way to Pigeon Creek, and that's ideally the way that you would want it to go. So I saw that, and I saw that there's also considerable amount of proposed paving on the surface of the property. Presently, there's much of it is gravel. It's a hard gravel surface, and I know that's been an interim use or interim material, but the paving as proposed is quite an improvement because it will cut down on dust that will get onto the highway and off to the neighboring properties. So I like that. I also like the bio cell. The concept there is great, and I'm pleased that the city of Bettendorf is now embracing that, and that Mr. Mailer has included it on his plan with his consulting engineer. I spent almost 2 hours this afternoon with Mr. Mailer in his office, and we had a wonderful broad-ranging conversation, and about the project, about our families and history of the Bettendorf area and so forth. But most of it was on, you know, seriously on the project. I too am, as someone mentioned earlier, I'm also concerned about the capacity and size and the design of this bio cell, and it just so happens that Mr. Mailer, as he's mentioned already, that he's willing to increase the size and capacity of that cell and perhaps add a stormwater basin. So I don't want to be putting words in your mouth, but I believe that's what you said.
I told you we had no problem doing it. I showed you the extra land where we have to put it, and it would be no big deal. And Chris could design it and submit it to engineering, and it's going to be Chris? Over and above what we need, but we have no problem doing it.
Yeah, presently, As designed, this biocell can only handle an inch and a quarter worth of rainfall.
That's per hour, right?
No, it's per event. Like
per event? Probably, per hour?
That's a 24-hour event.
24-hour
event. 24-hour okay. event. So if it rains more than inch and one quarter in 24 hours, that biocell is going to fill to the top, and the excess water will drain into the highway ditch, and then it will drain on into Pigeon Creek, kind of unimpeded. Okay, so the biocell works for these, I wouldn't call it a minor event, but certainly we're getting a lot of rainfalls over an inch and a quarter, inch and a half, 2 inch, 3 inch, and those would be concerning. And when Ethan Mailer and I started to talk about this today, he identified an additional piece of property, which is just off to the east of his plan here, which could accommodate additional stormwater or water quality control. And with his offer and with the interest and that I have, and I'm sure we're all very interested in keeping the waters clean and in Pigeon Creek and Mississippi River, I think we ought to fully explore that. And Mr. Mailer's got a very good engineer here that could easily come up with some designs and cost estimates and so forth. And I would just encourage the commission to welcome that change and to require it. So with that, I will stop talking here. If you have any questions of me, I'd be happy to talk to you about strawberries and sweet corn.
Hey, one thing about water quality, though, when I was out there today, I did notice that there were two fires burning on your property immediately adjacent to the creek, and my thought was that all that ash and such would go right into the creek, which would then go right into the Mississippi. So I did notice there were at least one, and I got a little video if you wanted to see it, of a fire burning out there right on the shore of the creek.
Boy, I tell you, you're watching close.
I'm close. Yeah, I check things out before the meeting. Yes, I do.
I'm guilty.
Okay.
They were little fires burning some brush.
Yeah, but I guess from the water quality standpoint, those would be much better farther away from the creek.
All right.
We'd appreciate that.
Well taken.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else in the audience with regard to this matter? Nope. Back to the commission. Any other comments or questions?
Nope. Mr. Chairman, in light of the comments about water drainage, water quality, what is our requirements? Is our requirements an inch and a quarter? Is
that? Yes, and that's the state requirement. Okay. That is the statistically 90% of the rainfall events in Iowa are an inch and a quarter or less. So that is straight from the Iowa Stormwater Manual. That is what our ordinance requires.
So that covers 90% historically, which...
Yeah, and that's actually been adjusted up 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
So in the future, it will most likely continue to go up, but currently that is the state standard.
Is there any way that we can require, and I'll just pick a number, because it's been said here tonight, 3 inches. Right. I mean, is there any way we can say, this is great, make it 3 inches, and we're good to go?
Ultimately, Chris, I guess that'd be for you, but our ordinance reads that as a minimum.
I think in this situation, the issue is, does it meet our ordinance? If I don't think if there were to be a requirement to go larger than that in certain situations, it would require an amendment to the ordinance. In this type of decision, the question is whether the application meets the ordinance. Certainly, the applicant, based on his conversations with all of the adjacent landowners, is is willing, is able, if he so desires, to put in a larger biocell. But the question is whether, the question here is whether it meets our ordinance. Mm-hmm. And if we want to require more, I would suggest that we, that that be a legislative decision as opposed to a decision as to whether the site plan meets our ordinance.
But we can certainly encourage
his
voluntary increase.
I mean, it wasn't clear to me if he was saying that he could do that or that he will do that. And I guess that's the question.
Well, hey, Chris Townsend with Townsend Engineering. And, you know, I've talked to Ethan after you guys talked today. And, you know, and he's willing to do something here, no question. I mean, it's not at the end of the world. Now, this water quality, and that's the thing with water quality, this is a massive bioswale. We do these things all the time. And it was sized for, I can't even remember, I don't have it in front of me, but it's 2.5 acres, I think, of pavement. So it's big. I mean, it's 5 feet deep, 10 feet wide, 500 feet long. I mean, this thing compared to any of other ones we've done is a big one. So what I think we would propose, I think the easier thing to do and maybe the better thing in this case is to build in a component of stormwater detention, which isn't required, but we could build that into this, which would then add to the water quality, I think, overall anyway, but would still detain the water, and it's actually the cheaper way to do it even for him and simpler, I think. And I think that's probably a better way in my eyes, you know, as long as we can get it to work elevation-wise and everything else, which I think we can. But I think that's a better way to go about it. I think really water quality, I think we're providing, you know, pretty good water quality as it is.
Is this something, Wavy? It sounds like you have a lot of steps to go through. So it doesn't seem that this is critical to be done tonight. Should we delay this and have them go back and have a chance to look at this issue and see if he really can afford to put in this detention? Or is this something that you feel you can afford? And then if I would say I move to approve this with the proviso that you have a detention pond for, and this is where I'm at a loss. I don't know how big to make it, you know.
I have a quick question, Chris. You said that you were sizing this for a certain amount of concrete.
Right.
Is that to the amount of concrete that's there or more?
No, that's actually, it's interesting because we did the site plan originally 10 years ago, I think 9 years ago, whatever it was a long time ago, a lot more people in the room back then. But what happened was, so we sized everything for a certain amount of impervious surface, which was not that much. So it was the existing plant and a little bit around it. So what we did in this time, we took, even though there's things that are paved already out there, we took all of that, so anything that was added since the last submittal, and including all these new buildings and all the area, we included all of that.
All just that so surface space?
Yep, okay. So we made sure we covered anything that has been added or will be added.
Cool, thanks, yeah. Chris.
Yeah. I was struggling a little bit too, Paul, with that same concept. It sounds like we got a back of the room kind of meeting of the minds, and after your meeting today, Andy, with Ethan, that hey, directionally we've got a solution that works. And I think what you're describing, Chris, makes tons of sense, because if we have that big rain event, it's got a way to hold it until it works its way out under the proper swale properties, and everybody wins that way. So, but by the same token, with legal counsel here properly guiding us and saying it currently meets current state guidelines, we don't really have a basis to
require
it.
No, and obviously I'm not an attorney, and I defer to Chris, but I would really try to advise against arbitrarily stating a 2.5-inch rain or a 3-inch rain. Just even trying to take any type of a guess at doing that. I mean, we've got the dedicated ordinance. It's got a water quality component. Our detention is sized for a 100-year event. The 1.25-inch rainfall event is basically a 1-year event, a little less. And then we also have a 2-year event, or 2.5-inch rainfall event called the channel protection volume that's designed. So we've got a lot of other steps in there. So if they're going to provide detention, I think we have plenty in the ordinance. But again, it's not required.
So the detention component essentially satisfies the capacity issue for you.
Yeah, it would, absolutely.
Does that work for engineering and owner?
We don't need to do cross or anything like that. We'd add detention without a problem, especially a basin in front of the bioswale because we'd like to catch more things before it goes to bioswale, so we're not redoing the bioswale all the time. So we're all for putting some
makes
kind of pond
of
or holding detention in front of the already bioswale. He might have to turn it or change it so we can catch it beforehand, but there's no question we're all for that.
Makes sense. Good. So we could propose or recommend approval
as
a motion with the agreement that they would incorporate per their already stated agreement that they agree with the concept or the requirement that there would be detention.
Or the request, maybe you want to say request instead of requirement. Request for detention.
They've agreed to install the detention.
Yeah, I think they've agreed to do
they've
that.
Agreed.
And I think, yeah, so I think that approval with the with the applicant's agreement to add detention to the plan.
Yeah. Good. So who'd like to make that motion for me?
So moved.
Thanks. Lisa, you got that?
And I'll second Paul.
All right. So moved and second. Any discussion on that motion? No?
Apparently Lisa's going to figure out what you moved on.
Lisa's going to figure it out. All right. So we have
I just have one little
yeah.
I just have to mention. It sounds like right now everything's working well there. I just hope as we change this around, we don't cause a problem that isn't there now. We have to because of adding it. You're going to have to add the bioswale and the detention and everything. But it sounds to me like you're actually going to have to engineer this to now run towards Pigeon Creek, but mm-mm. into the detention, no, into no, the... No.
So the water does actually, it all drains to Pigeon Creek.
But it goes a kind of...
Yep, and that's
it goes
the only
north
outlet.
Before it comes back.
That's the only outlet from the entire site. So really, okay. from an engineering perspective, it shouldn't be difficult for
it's
Chris
good.
To add
yeah.
a detention
yeah.
component.
Okay.
Good.
The whole site's tipped towards that direction.
So we have a motion and a second to approve.
I do have one other item.
Yeah.
A question about utilities for the facility as far as utility infrastructure. What is the plan there?
Specifically, Mike, to answer your question from our conversation earlier today, they are bringing in I believe it's a 6-inch line, Chris, correct? The water main?
Maybe 8 in the end.
8, depending on whatever your fire flows are. But bringing in a private water main service outside of the right-of-way.
From Valley?
From Valley Drive that'll tie on to Iowa American's main on the north side there. So the question came up from their initial site plan 9 years ago. Did show a water main extension. Now, the plan showed it. The resolution did not read that. So what city council required from them was a water main or a water connection. Water and sewer connections. So as part of this plan from the sewer side, they are abandoning the existing septic field, and they're going to run a new sanitary sewer service to connect to a main that exists down in the southwest corner. I don't believe that Ethan and Iowa American were able to come to terms to bring water under the creek, under Pigeon Creek, from the adjacent subdivision. Financially, that I can tell you, working in that creek was very difficult for that the fields development there. They spent $30,000-$40,000 in dewatering just to try to get sewer across there.
Yeah. Well, and I saw the grades and everything down there too. I did see the fire plug on the west side of the creek that's sitting over there.
Yep.
But you would have quite the...
Yes. So, and unfortunately, I realize water is a public utility, you know, in our mind, but ultimately it's a private utility. Iowa American owns that. We do not dictate extensions of private utilities. We can only dictate our public utility. So when somebody develops, they have to bring the sanitary sewer there. We've discussed the sanitary sewer. He's basically at the end of the line in terms of that extension. So he is providing the water service to satisfy his fire requirements. But beyond that, we have
control of Iowa American Water.
Yeah, and we've talked that we can't force him to bring a public main across that property.
Okay.
So it's my understanding then the tests, basically what you're saying, the tests are done, is adequate flow for fire suppression?
They still need to provide that.
I'm sorry?
They still need to provide that adequate flow. I know they've talked with Iowa American Water. I know the engineering firm has, or architects, and I have not had correspondence back what that is.
Two more weeks.
So. But before they pull a permit to do anything, they'll have to meet all those regulations,
yeah,
along with the building, the structure.
All part of plan review.
Yep. Okay.
And just for your state of mind, it does say here, at the end, that all of these notes, recommended action by the city, had to be included, including number four, the petitioner must coordinate with the Bettendorf Fire Marshal regarding fire hydrant placement and fire suppression requirements. So it's definitely something taken care of at staff level before any of the permits are taken, given. I'm just letting him know. Ethan, that's the process.
Well, that goes back to original site plan when the water line was supposed to be extended down parallel to Highway 67 and never did. So why would this be different?
Again, we don't control the water company. It's a private-owned business, and they make a determination as to the financial feasibility of crossing that creek at that point.
Yeah, so he was able to obtain his fire service using his well and temporary on-site storage, I believe, is how you've been satisfying it to this point. And now, per an agreement that we made, the city made with him for the access point onto Valley Drive, it was to bring permanent fire flow protection to the site. So ultimately, you know, Mike, the water is sitting right at the corner. There's nothing preventing you from contracting with Iowa American to bore under the road and bring it to your site if that's the concern.
Yeah, back to the aforementioned comment you made about the costs associated with it, you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And at one point, I mean, I guess they're able to have a workaround for the fire suppression system that I guess I need to reevaluate for what I need to do.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, great. Thank you, everyone, for your comments and input. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-099, subject to staff recommendations with the additional modification to provide, with the agreement of the owner-developer, a on-site water detention mechanism. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Case 19-099 is recommended for approval. Okay, Greg?
Mr. Chairman, our next case, 19-100. The area outlined here in brown is essentially the site development plan area that we're looking at in regards to what will be a retirement home housing complex, if you want to call it that. And this is essentially the subdivision, Glenbrook Ridge 2nd. It'd be lots 2, 3, 6, and 7 with some accompanying outlots. And this will be replatted in the future to take this whole site and make it into one subdivision. And there's also some other cleanup that might be done, some modifications on that plat. The building is right here. And one accesses entry to it by going down the private drive, which is known as Glenbrook Circle South. You parking here, and throughout, and the parking requirements were correctly met. You also have a means of a fire or access lane that goes around various parts of the building to make sure that the sides can be accessed. Part of the design, you do have a 25-foot buffer. There will be 64 conifers required in this area right here. It's part of the agreement that prevailed some time back when the property owners surrounding the site and the past owners of this site agreed to that buffer as part of the separation. Closest spot to the building is over to this lot, 260 feet away. And this is a first story element. There'll be two stories in this area, and the remaining portion of this structure will be three stories, so it's descending. And the ground also is descending at this point. As I mentioned, landscaping, requirements were met. What we would want to see in this area is conifers. That was the agreement, so that any deciduous element can be redistributed. We want to make sure that there aren't any gaps, that the idea is that works. Also, berming that would be required for this area has to be brought in place in berming anywhere else as per the agreement. and this is an elevation of what the structure would look like. This is to the north, and this is to the south. Staff, in reviewing this proposal, would ask, are there any questions? Staff would recommend approval with the conditions in the report.
Okay, thanks, Greg. John, anything since publication on this matter?
This has gone through a considerable amount of process. I remember the first neighborhood meeting where the idea of this retirement facility came up was well over a year ago. I was able to attend that. Greg was able to attend another neighborhood meeting that was held by these developers last Thursday. I was unavailable at the Board of Adjustment. I recall back from the initial neighborhood meeting that there were several suggestions, the berming that Greg has talked about, the landscaping, all of that has been incorporated into this final plan. Even the scaling of the building and that very top elevation shows very well what they're doing. The folks with single family residential units along Field Psych asked that the north end of this facility be a single story. It is. And that it be graduated to two stories, and that the three story be down on the south end. And I think as a result of the almost excessive amount of process that went into this, the developers reacted very appropriately to the neighbors' concerns.
Yeah, thanks, John. And just from a, I'll call it user standpoint, this elevation is wonderful. Love to see it. It helps us tremendously, helps me tremendously visualize it. This is exactly the kind of thing we're looking for when we try to visualize what's happening. And I do really like the idea of it starting short and getting tall as the it fits the topography, it fits the whole dynamic we're talking about. So I was really pleased to see that. So thanks for whoever or however that came to be. It was nicely put together for us to visualize. So, yeah. All right. Questions or comments from the commission, please?
My only comment would be to ditto what you said, Roy. I think it's a wonderful looking project that's mm-hmm. going to be a nice addition to the area. And if it took a year to get that, I think it was time well spent.
Mm-hmm. Anyone in the audience with regard to this matter? You guys are all quiet out there. Nobody's saying anything. Okay, back to the commission then.
They want to get to the cookies, Mr.
Yeah. Oh, there are cookies, yeah. There's no free lunch, but there's free cookies back there.
I guess my only question, just looking at Nelson Construction coming out of Des Moines, just wondering if you're going to be using local contractors or if you're going to be bringing everybody over from Des Moines. What's your process like?
Mike Nelson, 1425 Glen Oaks Drive, West Des Moines, Iowa. We're a general contractor, but we hire local subcontractors and vendors to build our projects. We do not self-perform any work.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Nope. Okay. I'll have a motion then.
Mr. Chairman? I will move that we approve case number 19-100, subject to staff recommendations.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 19-100, Glenbrook Circle South Site Development Plan. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Case 19-100 is recommended for approval. And that would take us to commission update.
On December 3rd, the City Council meeting approved the site development plan for the 3200 block of 62nd Street. That's the 50,000 square foot warehouse building. They approved the preliminary plat of Wilderness Point additions. They approved the site development plan for 4100 Elm Street. That's the C&W Trucking.
Merry Christmas.
You too. Thanks.
Thank
on
you.
The, thanks for the great site
17th, plan. The final approval for the PUD at Jefferson School site passed, as well as did the preliminary plan for the development of the Jefferson School site.
More time well invested in
project.
Good job, team.
Yes. Perseverance pays off.
And most importantly, Mr. Chairman, the most important update I have for you is former Commissioner Burt is now 7th Judicial District Court Judge Burt, or to you people, Your Honor.
Your Honor. Aww. Yes. Yes. And
congratulations.
And I think he'll do a fine job at it. Looking forward to interacting. Not from the not from the defendant's standpoint, but yeah.
Where are you planning?
All right. So anything else for the good of the order? So this would be Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, whatever other you may have. Happy New Year. So thank you to staff for another great year of persevering and pushing through some of these challenging developments. But I think this is a great example of the output. This took a year, as you know, but it's the poster child for the way it should happen. So thank you for your efforts on that. Safe travels, John, for you. I know you're going to take a little trip, so early in the morning, bright-eyed. All right.
There'll be no bright-eyed, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, no bright-eyed. Have your wife drive. We're adjourned. All right.